You're listening to Longwoods Radio, your healthcare source for ideas, new policies, and best practices. Listen right now to Michael Greer's presentation on information technology and information management at Longwood's own Breakfast with the Chiefs.
It's always a challenge to figure out what to talk about at these sessions because there's so much to talk about. I try to incorporate as much new material as I can and as much old material as I can by way of updates just to sort of follow certain trends. One of the things that happened very recently, just a month ago or so, is eHealth Ontario released its draft strategy document. I'm sure you've all had a look at it, and there was an opportunity for feedback. But the strategy document had 10 sort of principles at the beginning, sort of underpinning principles, which I thought I would use as the basis for the talk this morning. And just go through those principles and try to illustrate them with some examples and some ideas and talk a little bit about some of the how of the strategy. The what of the strategy is interesting, but I thought that I'd try to deal with some of the principles issues. So that's the framework that we'll use. There they are, but we'll go through sort of each one and then and look at some things along with it. I have to note that this is the first time that this kind of a comprehensive strategy document has gone to the entire field, the entire province, openly, publicly, for commentary. So I have to compliment Sarah Kramer on getting off to a start. I know she's here somewhere. There she is. Congratulate her for getting off to a great start, but it really having the courage to put the plan in front of colleagues across the province. Please come up. The center aisle is much better. I'm going to keep directing people. I hate it. People always end up standing against the wall, and it looks so uncomfortable. We should really put the podium over on that side, and then people come in this door, but anyway. The first one is that the organization, eHealth Ontario, will focus on enabling clinical outcomes to better patient care, not technology for its own sake. And you really see that in the opening of the strategy, which talks about a diabetes agenda, a patient safety agenda, and a wait times agenda. And I think everybody's familiar with those three and what they entail. But the interesting thing to my eye is the last line, which talks about how the performance improvement is to be measured. What are we actually looking for in terms of a clinical result? I can't emphasize enough how important this is in any e-health initiative to be crystal clear on what kind of clinical change or operational change we're trying to get out of making the investment and out of implementing the system. Now, you notice what's not on here, which is really interesting, is there's nothing here about an EHR. It is mentioned in the strategy. That is one of the important goals of the Ontario eHealth agenda. But it is a very nebulous goal. It talks about putting stuff into computers. It doesn't really talk about what clinical results we're trying to get. So the strategy is very bold in saying we're looking for clinical improvements of these sorts as a result of our investments. Now, early clinical benefit is the key to building and sustaining support for the strategy. So there are a number of players that need to buy into this, obviously. Clinicians are one that everybody thinks about all the time. But the people who fund and make these investments are very important players in all this. So we think of government in that regard. Government, of course, is a complex entity that includes bureaucracies but also includes elected officials. Of course, elected officials are impacted by patients and the general population. So getting significant clinical impact is very important in getting and sustaining support for these activities, because obviously the sums of money involved are very significant. So in looking at this building and sustaining support agenda, I think it's always important for us to step back for a moment and say, what is the context, the clinical context, the healthcare system context in which we are trying to implement these kinds of systems? Well, I always show this graph. Actually, not always, but I look at it every year, and every couple of years I put it back up. This graph shows the proportion of nurses by age group. This is a Canadian information from CIHI. And you can see that for most of the major age cohorts in the younger age groups, you can see that we have declining proportions in all of those age groups. You can see the sort of baby boom cohort moving through the system. So we're starting to see, even in the 50 to 54 age group, it started to decline. You can see how it was rising, and now it's just starting to decline. And it's the 55 and 60 plus groups that are now rising the fastest. This is a huge, profound change in the makeup of our clinical professional groups. There's a little bit of hope in this. You can start to see that there's some enrollment effect, thank God, or thank Dot, maybe. It's pretty close to the same thing. This response is totally inadequate, and it's been slow in coming. But you can see, if you look at these terminal bars here, okay, they're an indication of coming retirement rates, okay, the proportion of nurses that will retire shortly, and you compare it to the height of this bar, which is a reasonable estimate of the new people coming into the profession, and you can see how that imbalance is starting to get concerning. The physician information looks very similar. But I would say that the policy response in this regard has been much stronger in terms of improving medical enrollments across the country. But of course, a decision to increase enrollments today takes 7 years before any new graduates come out of the system. And so there has been a response. It occurred quite a number of years ago, but we're still not seeing much of a change in the trend lines at this point. The other thing that's happening, and I didn't include the graph, is a massive shift in the male-female distribution of physicians across the country. And female graduates, I think, make up about 55% now of all med school graduates. They have different practice patterns, so that also adds to the complexity of this group. But this is the audience that we are building e-health applications for. Now, this is also something that I can't give any kind of a talk without talking about economic factors in this era. The Globe talked about mavens of doom on the weekend, that article. So I thought I'll have my 15 minutes of doomdom in the middle of the talk. But there's the the continuing rise. You can see real growth, this is Canadian information, real growth in the 3.8 to 4.3% range in the last couple of years is what CIHI's estimate is. This is growth after inflation. This is adjusted for inflation. So the fourth quarter GDP information came out yesterday, so I couldn't resist sort of having a look at that. So this is the GDP in Canada in 2008, calendar 2008, was about minus 1.5%. And the blue bars are the growth, annual growth in health expenditures. So you can see a couple of things here. First of all, just remind everybody of the recession in the early 90s. And we all remember what happened there. Healthcare expenditures continued to grow through that recession. And then we saw yawning deficits. And then there was a massive reaction to that in terms of trying to constrain the growth in healthcare expenditures. And we actually had several years of, and again, these are real numbers, so it's after inflation. Okay, we had several years of contraction. We all remember what that was like. It was very uncomfortable period for everybody. And so, you know, when you look at these numbers, you can sort of averaging all of these just in your mind's eye, you saw the reaction in terms of contraction of healthcare spending occurred after the recession. So there is a lag period before it starts to kick in. Then we went through years and years of healthcare spending growth that was higher than the growth of the overall economy. So the proportion of the economy consumed in healthcare activities was increasing during that period. And then last year looks very much like 1990. Now, if you take that same information and just compare the two numbers, so what was the difference between the growth in healthcare spending and the growth of the economy, you get these numbers. So what this is saying is that in 1990, healthcare spending grew 3.4% faster than the growth in the economy. And these were the catch-up years that we just talked about. So you can see that we've been growing much faster than the economy, and in 2008, it was almost a 5% growth faster than what the overall economy was growing. This is the sustainability problem. This is not a sustainable condition because you see steadily increasing proportions of government spending going to healthcare. So this graph shows you what's the percent of provincial program spending that goes to health. Now, when we went through the last recession, so the pink line at the top is Ontario. When we went through the last recession, we were somewhere around 36% of provincial program spending was in health. Now, going into this recession, it's 46%. So we're in a much weaker situation to be able to continue to support healthcare through this situation. And I think with the contraction that we're seeing in Ontario and the budget for 2009-10 pretty much already settled in terms of healthcare expenditures, I expect that we'll crack the 50% barrier this year. So this is a major policy challenge for the government, and something will have to occur to deal with this, either other sources of money coming into the system, which I think is unlikely, or we're going back into an era of major cost constraint. I remember what it was like trying to introduce information systems into a hospital that is in the midst of downsizing. It is almost impossible to do that. It is very difficult to get people to think about change management and major change programs in the midst of significant cost challenges. So that principle, let's go back to it. Meaningful clinical impact must be demonstrated in the first 18 months of every e-health initiative. There's a reason for that. Okay, there's a very important reason. One is that if you spend a lot of time working on technical stuff before you engage users, you can get yourself offside in terms of what user needs are. But the second thing is that if you wait longer than that, there's always a chance that your program is going to be swamped by other issues that will come into the situation. In this case, I think it's very likely we're going to face those challenges. The irony, of course, in all of this, and I'll show this in a few slides later, is that the e-health agenda can actually help with this. So there actually could be some complementarity here in terms of helping to solve the problem. It just may not be fast enough in order to meet the immediate policy needs that will come up. Now, this is a study that came out in the archives of internal medicine just last month. And it continues to interest me that the mainstream medical journals that usually talk about clinical trials and clinical cohort studies are starting to look at e-health initiatives as significant quality improvement vehicles and trying to look at the clinical impact of these systems. This was a study that was done in Texas, and let me start by saying I don't think you should take too much away from this study. Probably the most important thing about the study is that somebody did it, and that the Archives of Internal Medicine thought it was worthy of publication. All it does is it looks for correlations between the degree of automation of 41 metropolitan hospitals in Texas and the various indicators listed here. So inpatient mortality, complications, case costs, and the length of stay. So just try to see, just generally, does increasing automation in those hospitals, and automation as measured by these four things, notes and records online, order entry, test results online, and some form of clinical decision support, do they see any correlation between performance and degree of automation? All the dots say no statistically significant correlation was found. But there were a couple of things that were interesting. In situations where, if you look at the patient cost column, you can see that as you move down the chain, they saw a correlation with lower case costs in the highly automated hospitals. And they also saw that in hospitals that had implemented decision support as part of their systems, that complication rates were lower. Now, all this says is there's an association. It might just mean that there's good management in hospitals that automate, and there's no cause and effect activity. So, you know, we can't actually conclude something from this. But I just think it's good that people are starting to think about this and look at this, and starting to try to discern that investments in e-health actually have an impact on providing healthcare. So a couple more principles in the strategy. Transparency and building trust with partners across the system. Performance metrics and success indicators measured and reported publicly. Tracking e-health metrics for all health IT activities in Ontario. So that doesn't just say things that are coming from eHealth Ontario itself, and goals expressed in clinically relevant terms. So, I mean, obviously the wait time strategy is the gold standard for this kind of transparency in the province. This graph, I've just lifted these graphs out off the wait times website. This is the cancer surgery sort of rate, 90th percentile wait times. The red line there across is the target. And the range, between the red dots on the top and the green dots on the bottom is the best Lynn and the worst Lynn in the province. You can sort of see the range of 90th percentile wait times across the different Lynns. And you can definitely see a trend line across the province. And you've all seen these before. Cataract surgeries, come into the target. Knee replacement is making good progress. And some things aren't making very good progress. MRI, despite massive increases in capacity, the demand for services has kept pace, so we don't see much improvement in these wait times, and everything's above target. The point is not the data, although the data does help people to manage the healthcare system rationally and put resources where they belong. But the point on transparency is critically important here. The courage to actually post all of this publicly, to make sure that we're all working from the same data set, to make sure that we're all clear on what we're trying to measure in terms of improving the healthcare system, is absolutely critical. Now, there's an information system that underlies this that's in thousands of surgeons' offices and hospitals around the province. But the clinical results are posted and clear for everyone. This is essential in terms of achieving performance improvement and getting any value from these e-health investments. This graph, which when it was originally put out, I didn't think much of it. These web diagrams don't really appeal to me that much. But I'm becoming a convert to it over time because it so quickly highlights the areas of success and the areas of failure in terms of the strategy. And that the strategy, which started with five modalities and has been gradually increasing over time, you can sort of see it on one page, and you can see very quickly how we're doing as a system in terms of closing gaps in care. This type of thing is very effective at helping system managers, Lynn leadership, hospital leadership, clinicians to know where attention is required. And having that kind of a dashboard is a first for us in healthcare. I mean, we just haven't had that kind of information before. And I look forward to the day when we can look at a graph like this about diabetes and understand the gaps in care in diabetes, or understanding gaps from the perspective of patient safety. Advice from experts with a track record of success will be sought. That's distinct from experts without a track record. There's lots of those. People who have successfully engaged with clinicians in e-health initiatives, as well as people from across the province who actually do this stuff every day and who actually understand how to do it. Sarah actually implemented this principle before the strategy was even out, in that Alauddin Murali and Donna Strait. Alauddin's here. I see Alauddin over there. See, Alauddin, I've always wanted to have a slide with your name on it. So here it is in the title. But Alauddin and Donna were two of the key leaders around the Capital Health Netcare agenda, which I've talked about many times in this update. But I continue to talk about it because it continues to show progress. There's an important story here because there were two competing portal agendas that came out, one in Edmonton with the provider organization and one from a government perspective. And although the one with the government perspective had a lot of merit, the Capital Health had a trump card that it was able to play, which is that it had more complete data of interest, of clinical interest to the clinicians, and therefore was able to attract more support. This is a very important lesson for us in Ontario, because while we think about implementing clinical systems province-wide, A lot of clinicians are using systems close to home from their hospitals or from EMRs in their office, and those systems have more complete clinical information about their patients of interest than provincial systems ever will, or at least will for the next 5 years. So if we compete with those local initiatives for clinician attention, we will lose. And that's the story here. So Capital Health won, although it wasn't supposed to be a competition, but that's where the clinicians gravitated. And eventually, the government realized this was the case and then asked Capital Health to host this application for the whole province. So this is what's happened. This is data up to December 2008. This is the number of active users that logged into the system each month. Okay, this isn't any kind of cumulative. This isn't people with passwords. This is people that actually logged into the system during that month. And you can see that it's pushing now to 14,000 clinicians looked at the Netcare application at least once in the month of December. You can see these lighter colored bars were Netcare as it was implemented in Edmonton. This is when the provincial system was hosted by Capital Health, and it started to grow, and then the two of them were merged together. Okay, and then you see, you know, a single application going forward. This is an incredible success story, and total focus on giving the clinicians what they needed clinically was critical in attracting this mass of people to the table. And you can see that the clinicians involved, it's a multidisciplinary involvement from across the province. So it is a very, very impressive achievement. Partnerships will be established to deliver e-health solutions. Realizing that this needs to be a multilateral effort across the province, and this is not going to be done from some provincial a centralized team working on its own. Very important to realize this last point, that eHealth Ontario will at its peak spend less than the aggregate IT spending of all the hospitals across the province, never mind the CCACs and other players. This has to be taken into account. The strategy had some interesting tables in it in terms of estimates of how many people exist in different delivery organizations. So eHealth Ontario is the biggest and will get bigger when the eHealth program, which is the third down, merges with it on April 1st. There's a cluster of people that run IT for the Ministry of Health, and then you see some other province-wide organizations with various groups of people. The OHA has really been doing some interesting work surveying hospitals to try to understand what the IT and e-health resources are in those hospitals. So this is another 2,000 people distributed across hospitals in the LHINs, as you can see distributed there. So all told, it comes to about 4,000 people across the province, which sounds to me like a very small number of people for what we have to accomplish. So there's going to be a very big challenge trying to expand this pool of people across the province to meet the challenges of the next number of years. There's also some interesting things in the strategy about deployment models will vary by project. So some projects make sense to have a centralized agenda. Other projects, better to have people in provider organizations or very close to the clinicians doing the implementation. And it talks about three three models, which I thought was worth looking at a little bit more. The systems that that make sense in a province-wide kind of approach, so a single application for the whole province, centrally administered, have characteristics where the data is required across the province, a well-defined solution, and supports province-wide programs or strategies. At the other end of the spectrum, you have things that have strong influence on local clinical workflows, which of course are different in different organizations, where there's a lot of legacy systems, so the cost of moving to standard platforms is very high, and there are few standards existing in the industry, which makes it very difficult to sort of combine data models across the province. And there's a table in the strategy that sort of groups the projects across the province into these various groups. It bears some careful looking. But again, just from a cost perspective, this column, okay, from a spending and people activity perspective, is larger than the other four columns combined. So very important to realize that continuing activity in hospital systems is continuing in parallel to some of the provincial agendas. And wherever possible, legacy systems will be leveraged to achieve provincial goals. We've talked a little bit about this risk of competition. The legacy systems have, in many cases, strong loyalty from their clinical users. And so we want to take advantage of that and build on it rather than trying to compete with it. So this graph comes from the OHA's survey results. They have this this e-health adoption index that they've created, and this is just showing where hospitals are on sort of the adoption curve across the province. You can see there's a very wide range of achievement of clinical systems across the province for a wide variety of reasons. You can see nobody's finished. And I think whenever somebody declares that they are, we'll just go up to 110. So, you know, it's a constant evolution, but we're dealing with a very wide variety of achievement across the province. I also put this up just to commend the OHA. I think the OHA is doing a fabulous job. Ontario MD is also doing a fabulous job of trying to publish statistics and information about our achievement in this area so that people can start benchmarking themselves against other organizations in the province. Traditionally, it's been very difficult for a board chair or for a hospital board to know where they stand from an information perspective, because all the information they ever get is from the management team that's telling them how fabulous everything is. So this now gives people an idea of where they are on that spectrum. This is also from the OHA survey results. They're starting to look at information year over year so we can start to understand whether we're making progress in some of these areas or not. Now, these are all very early attempts at measuring and having objective information, but all extremely useful information we never had before, and will certainly help us to focus our energies as a province. The issue of early engagement of clinicians is a very important one. Active users are a much better source of feedback than advisory panels. When you start a project, there is no system to be used. You have to have a clinician advisory panel. They will give you advice. That advice is not always very good because they don't often know what they're talking about when they tell you you know, to do something. So, you know, if a person has no experience with a particular technology, and you ask them to sign off on a set of specifications for a system, they actually do not understand what they're signing off. So I've often seen project teams get very frustrated with the fact that the clinicians don't support a system that exactly meets the specifications that they gave them in the first place. So understanding that active users actually get it because they're using the system, they're riding the horse, they understand something about how it works, and the first time they touch it, they think of the 10 things that they need to make it more useful to them clinically. So getting early involvement from clinicians as active users is critically important. Monitoring their activities in the way that Capital Health did with the Netcare project, and then catering to their activities. And often, then you reconstitute your advisory panels, and you want to favor advisory panels that include people who won't use the system, not the people who are all gung-ho about it and, you know, will use just about anything that has buttons on it, but rather those people that are very resistant to using the systems, because then they will give you very important design feedback. And realizing that these are evolutionary activities, not a single design, build, implement kind of activity. And the clinical content of solutions must be relevant and complete. One of the things that I've come to learn in recent years is that whenever I look at a front-end sort of application, I used to think that as a physician myself, that I could look at a front-end application and I could predict whether clinicians would use it or not. So I thought that was one of the big, you know, sort of pieces. So this goes back to advisors. So I'm a professional advisor, I guess, and I thought that I was pretty good at it and that I could judge whether people... Well, as I've spent more time in more organizations, I've seen many front-end applications that I would have predicted a clinician will never use. Clinicians will never touch that. And then I'm introduced to the 10,000 people who use it every day. So there was something wrong with my mental model. And what I started to realize is that it's not the functionality of the application or even the beauty of the user interface, but it's the completeness of the data set behind it and the clinical utility of the data set that is more important in determining a clinical user's reaction to a system. They go through some really ugly processes now to get at lab data, to get at information. They will do that if they can get to a complete data set. So a lot of times what you see with some of the sort of systems implementations that people do is they worry about the functionality. And architects especially were very worried about functionality and how it's going to function and how it's, you know, what are the functional specifications and trying to make it complete. And the content of the data set is sort of left as a secondary issue. Content is critically important to getting clinician engagement. And the predictability of that content is also important. So if I go to a database and I have a 50-50 chance of getting what I want, I don't know if I'll go. If there's a 10% chance of getting what I want, I'm not going for sure. If there's an 80% chance, then I'll probably go. But if there's 100% certainty that it's a complete data set, then I know that if I go there, I will get the answer that I'm looking for. And oh, by the way, then I know if there's no data, it means there's no data. It doesn't mean that it was just missing. It means that I know that the test wasn't done or the X-ray wasn't done. The way that the WTIS was implemented is a very good example of this. So this is how many surgeons' offices. So 3,300 surgeons' offices will be up and running by the end of March, by the end of this month. But when it was starting out, it's easy to sort of look at that now. Let's forget about that. Let's look at this. So we could have gone to the 300 surgeons that were gung-ho to do this. Let's find the enthusiastic ones who wanted to, you know, to try to get on board with this. But then you would have created a data set of no value, because you would have had some cardiologists and some gastric surgeons, etc. So the focus here was to pick cohorts of surgeons that together would be able to achieve a single complete and useful database. So from very, very beginning, the database was complete for a particular set of objectives for managing wait times for, say, cardiac surgery as an example. So picking those cohorts carefully and going for 100% is more important than trying to just get sort of a smattering of early adopters across the province. Many of our current provincial projects in Ontario suffer from this particular problem. There's a hospital in Mississauga doing it, a hospital in London doing it, a hospital in Ottawa doing it. None of those clinicians, by the way, care about the other clinicians' data. So they may be gung-ho about doing it, and they may be enthusiastic, and therefore you can easily recruit them to the table to get involved, but you don't end up with... Thank you, Anton. That's good, actually. I'm actually going to have a minute for a question. We've been trying to perfect this for 5 years, and we've never quite got it yet. Now I got to keep going fast so I don't slow down. So picking the cohort, what this means is you're going to go after a whole bunch of very resistant adopters right up front, okay? Because you want that complete data set. You want to get all the clinicians of a certain type or in a certain geographic area or what have you. And you can see correspondingly the volume of surgical cases that's being, and this is again all publicly available, all completely transparent. So this has been a huge success story, but there's some very important lessons that the principals in the strategy are trying to to learn from and echo. Now, OLIS is something that I've talked about a few times, and OLIS is the other side of this coin. It still doesn't have any clinical users. So we still don't know how clinical users will react to the data until we've actually got them on board and using it. And although there's a large and growing proportion of test results in Ontario being collected, and populated into the database. So there is some progress being made on the system and populating it. Those data sets are not yet complete for any particular population of patients, whether it be geographic or clinically defined or what have you. So even when we do start getting clinicians using it, they're going to see big holes in the information. And the system doesn't tell them where those holes are. And I think we're going to have real trouble getting people to use this application until we start focusing not on the application, but on the content of the data set. And then I think we can get the clinicians to come to the table. You can see there's been a very large investment before clinical users have been brought to the table. And so there's still uncertainty. I still hear people talk about this with great uncertainty. How is it going to work? Is it going to be accepted? That's an awful lot of money to have spent before we know what the clinical reaction is going to be. And again, focus groups are not a good indicator of this. Because there's been lots of those, and there's lots of enthusiastic people around this. We need to see graphs of active users before we can have any confidence that this is going to play out well. Contrast that with a much weaker platform, a non-scalable platform, a platform that will not solve the province's problems, but worthy of a look anyways, because what they've done is worked on the issue of the clinician adoption as the upfront issue. This I've reported on in past years as well. It's worthy of just updating. There's now four organizations providing data. There's now a variety of organizations with clinicians accessing the data. And here we see from their very recent report what's happening in terms of, again, active clinical users, people that logged on at least once during the month, and you can see this this steady increase in now much smaller numbers than Netcare in a much larger city, but still significant progress, and now a cohort of engaged clinicians that can now be co-opted into some of the provincial e-health agendas. Number of reports accessed from all sources by those same clinicians. You can see that it's pushing 10,000 reports per month. So this is something that from a front-end design and user engagement design perspective, we can have a fair bit of confidence that this is usable by clinicians and continuing to improve. And these are the report types that that are being looked at. Again, this is something that Capital Health looked at very carefully, trying to understand where the clinical value was and where should they make their next investment in adding to the content of the system. I'm going to end with you know, my favorite story, which is the Ontario telemedicine Ed Brown story, which you know, began with a few clinicians working at Sunnybrook trying to reach out to remote areas and has grown to now over 38,000 consultations being done on an annual basis. That is massive clinician adoption. The focus, again, was on clinical value and demonstrating clinical value. There was no governance structure in the early days. There was no clear operating funding line. It was sort of funding that was cobbled together from various sources. There was no scalable, robust, secure app, you know, network environment in those early days. They cobbled together whatever they could. Now today, it's a very robust structure. It's province-wide. It has a very good governance structure. It has clear funding sources. It's been incorporated into the schedule of benefits for physician remuneration. All those things now have been sorted out. I wish we could do a study where we turned back the clock and tried to start this project by sorting out the governance, the funding, the cabinet approvals, the scalable architectures, blah, 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 to see if they would have enjoyed the same success. So the thesis that I'm trying to present today is that the clinical adoption and very early clinical engagement and very clear clinical objectives are the key to these kinds of e-health strategies, and the technology pieces are very important but come after and serve that first agenda. So deciding what to build is not as important as deciding how and when to engage clinicians. What we build will then be guided by the clinical users. So clinical users, not advisors, not advisory teams and structures. As a result, the risk of failure is dramatically reduced under this situation. And after working in this for 20 years, I faced a lot of clinical challenges in trying to get people to adopt systems. And I've also faced situations where systems had a less than robust architecture, you know, had a major sort of technical challenge. The technical challenges are much easier to sort out. But getting the clinicians engaged after the fact, after something has been built, can be an extremely difficult exercise. So with that, I'll stop. And we actually have 5 minutes for questions.
Thank you, Michael.